This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Liz Metro. Liz is the CEO of Women Writers in Medicine and a brilliant sort of leader, consultant, person, manager, and thinker. Liz, I'm excited to get a chance to visit with you today. We're going to visit a lot about wellness, physician wellness, nurse wellness, what's going on, how people will respond and recover from COVID-19 is in a burnout and wellness perspective. Liz, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Absolutely, and it's such a pleasure to be here with you today. So as you mentioned, I'm a CEO of an organization and that focuses really on writing and researching for large institutions, for individuals in the healthcare space. And so naturally, as you can imagine, given the current pandemic, so much of that research that we're doing is focused on how clinicians are faring in the throes of pretty extraordinary times.
And what are you seeing? How are physicians and nurses doing right now? What's your sense of that?
Mm-hmm. Well, we host a number of huddles every week for clinicians nationwide and focus groups for clients, and are very much involved in some data collection for some of the nation's largest healthcare membership organizations and employers. And I will start by saying that what I'm seeing most readily is just the extraordinary capacity and compassion of the healthcare workforce. So as a non-clinician myself, it's always heartening to be on the calls with people who are working, you know, 18-hour days to improve the health of those around them and serve so well. That said, you know, the workforce came into this crisis already with extraordinarily high levels of burnout. So about 4 out of 5 of providers in data last year reported having at least one symptom of burnout. And 1 in 4 doctors have considered suicide. So really challenging times. And while we're still in the midst of this moment, we can look to other places around the world that have, you know, flattened the curve a bit to see that their clinical workforce, there was a study out in China recently for health workers who were dealing directly with COVID patients. And, you know, half now suffer from depression, 45% experience anxiety. We see a lot of trauma, PTSD, vicarious trauma. The Schwartz Center for Compassionate Care has done great work in this space as well, looking at the impact of these kinds of mass casualty events. And also, you know, to that point as well, we can look to past pandemics to glean insight on what we're experiencing and what we can be expecting. SARS health workers, for example, you know, high levels of PTSD health workers in Sierra Leone after Ebola, 90% reported social isolation, which
and
you know, certainly
expect,
exacerbates.
What do you, and take a moment on the mood of the nation's physicians and nurses, and just by further background, and I won't mention names, but you do these focus groups for some of the largest organizations in our country to try and really keep the finger on the pulse of what's going on and really to try and give them an outlet and chance to speak. And I know some of the names of the associations and firms that you work with and are some of the most trusted and most important groups in America. So talk to me for a moment about the current moment. The current moment, are physicians and nurses imbued with a sense of purpose? Are they just incredibly stressed out? Are they just so nervous? What's the current moment? And then tell me again the thoughts on when the wind comes out of the sails, when this does die down, will you see a massive amount of retirements, burnout, post-traumatic stress syndrome, and so forth?
Yeah, I kind of bucket my observations in three kind of categories. One is, for many clinicians, particularly early on, a sense of betrayal right? There, I've heard a lot from clinicians about, and as have the rest of us, about lack of PPE and lack of ventilators and preparedness and all of it. So there's a sense of betrayal. I certainly see emotional distress. And how this moment is both exposing what already was, but also exacerbating naturally. And the last bucket, though, is particularly interesting to me, and that is around purpose. So a lot of clinicians are you know, reconnecting with their intent to be in medicine in the first place. And we've seen expanded scope of practice. People are for many individuals, they're really getting back in touch with that mission-driven passion without, concern with all the other stuff that tends to drive healthcare and the business of healthcare. And again, thinking about other crises going on in the world. I mean, we've talked about the dual pandemic in our country with inequity and COVID. I think this sense of purpose that's kind of percolating right now for many is really important. I'm concerned, however, that when there is a new normal, whatever that looks like, and clinicians go back to work in more routine environments, that may be a real driver for attrition, that loss of clarity of purpose.
And talk about what else you're seeing today. What are some of the big associations and big companies that are so reliant on and trying to support physicians and nurses? How are they looking at things? What are they trying to do to help deal with this?
Yeah, I think some of the savvier ones are taking a page out of the Stanford playbook. Tate Shanafelt and his team of researchers recently came out with a kind of a model based on their focus groups that covers clinician anxiety in five ways. They say that, the requests for support from institutions or organizations kind of fall in the buckets of prepare me, protect me, care for me, support me, and hear me. And much like the Kubler-Ross model of sort of the stages of grief, I think that's a trend line and less just kind of discrete buckets. And where we need to be and where smart organizations are is, we've gotten past the prepare me and the protect me. We're really in the thick of it and thinking, kind of going through those stages. But now we're at this really important hear me stage. And, so I see big organizations starting to think creatively about how they are going to create space for processing and meaning making when the dust does settle, and it will. And that's really, really important. I would urge, listeners who are in leadership to be thinking about how we memorialize this moment in time, which has crystallized purpose, but also exposed a lot of the fractures. And we need clinicians to just talk it out, right? And to express this experience and what it's meant for them.
And take a moment, Liz, on what you do day to day and how you work.
Wow, that's a great question. Coffee off guard. So most of our work is really about partnering with institutions to understand their pain points and the concerns. So this is specific to the clinician wellness work. And then we spend a lot of time in the field, having focus groups, having one-to-ones, getting a sense of how people are doing. And then we do one of two things. We do large scale surveying and like capital R research. And then we also do a lot of storytelling. At the heart of my work anyway, I'd like to consider myself a storyteller. And particularly now, clinicians need to tell their stories. They need to know that their stories matter. Maya Angelou said there's no greater agony than the untold story. And so storytelling is so critical to the healing process. Before I got involved in healthcare, I worked in international development in global crises around the world and spent quite a bit of time in Iraq. And one of the key transition sort of phases for military in coming back from the trenches and kind of resuming life as normal is telling their stories and writing their stories and journaling. So right now we've got this like big meta work with large institutions to get like the macro story. And then we do this one-on-one work with clinicians to make sure that we've honored their experience as well.
Well, fantastic. I ask because you do some of the most interesting things and have some of the great perspectives that anybody I know on things. Talk a little bit about, as you move into the, you know, next part of this year, as you watch what happens with COVID-19 unfold and the physician and nurse community, talk about what can be done to help. Where do you see the ability to help here?
Let me ask you
to do one thing as you answer that question. You had before given four stages of what physicians and nurses want. Could you also, for our audience, summarize those four stages again?
Yeah, and again, I will credit Dr. Shanafelt for his great research on this. But to put it in sequence, I would say it's prepare me first, protect me. So give me the equipment. Support me, give me all of the wraparound services that I need, housing, financial support, et cetera. Care for me if I get sick. And then lastly, hear me. Let me reflect on this. Let me share my concerns and then do something with it. So that becomes then the institution's responsibility to sort of step in and take all of that learning and feedback from their workforce to really turn it into real change. There's also this body of work that is emerging from a lot of interesting places and interesting collaborations around the role of clinicians as advocates and activists. We started to see a little bit of that unfold prior to the pandemic with Doctors Against Gun Violence. We've seen it now. White Coats for Black Lives. I would encourage organizations and institutions who are listening to this, when we think about the clarity of purpose in this moment, where so many clinicians are really tapped into their mission and their purpose, one of the things I hear a lot from the workforce is, you know, how can I continue to channel a sense of purpose and advocacy? So if we, as an organization, when they audit all of their professional development, leadership development, which they will do to see where the gaps were in leadership and support during this time, crisis management, et cetera, I can't say enough about how important it is to bring in advocacy training, self-advocacy and capital A advocacy into professional development. I think it's essential right now.
And take a moment there on perspective on this. You work with some huge organizations that have really put a huge commitment, and you work with them, you consult with them, you run focus groups for them, into physician wellness and nurse wellness, and really all allied health professionals. It depends on the organization. Why are some organizations so committed to this and putting so much effort into it, and others, either from government officials or from others, mm-hmm. it doesn't even get any notoriety or news or attention? Why is it that there's a big divide between huge organizations that are quite committed to it and quite reliant on physician and allied health professionals or trying to support them, and then others don't seem to really give it much interest?
That's an excellent question. I think for some of the really big ones, the United Health Groups of the world, for example, you know, they know exactly how much, they've got a huge data engine. They know exactly how much it costs when a clinician leaves both the workforce and the their particular role. So we're talking $1 million to replace a doctor. That's no small amount. And so when they have the data to back it up, when we know better, we do better, right? And so there's a real interest in trying to save some capital there. conversely, then on the flip side, you have very small organizations, and I also work with those like on the clinic level that are so mission driven, and FQHCs who are really passionate about their work, and they're in it for, I think it's really mission, right? And wanting to make sure that they're caring for their colleagues just as they care for their patients. I wish I had a better answer, because I wish more institutions were elevating conversations around clinician wellness to the level that they need to be, because clinicians can't take care of sick patients when they themselves are not getting the support that they need.
Well, fantastic. Liz, it's always a great pleasure to visit with you. You've got this magnificent perspective, incredibly inspiring positive attitude. How do people learn more about you and Women Writers in Medicine?
Reach out. We would love to talk, to hear from you. You can connect with us at hello@womenwritersandmedicine.com. You can follow us wherever you get your social media fix. We're pretty active on Twitter @MedWomenWriters. And certainly LinkedIn and all of it. So I'd love to hear from folks. And I also love to hear from folks when they disagree with me. So if there are things that we're missing from my commentary, it's great to just banter and have important dialogues, because God knows we need to do a better job, because I am concerned about the workforce post-pandemic and what that's going to look like. So yeah, please reach out.
So you said something at the tail end there about people that disagree with you. Who could possibly disagree with you?
Oh, people. I'll ask my daughter. I'm sure she has a long list.
I am sure my list is longer if people that disagree with me. But let me tell you, Liz, it is always a pleasure to visit you. Just fantastic. We'll get this published at the Becker's Healthcare Podcast shortly. Thank you, Liz Metro, Women Writers in Medicine CEO, and just a fascinating leader in person. Thank you very much.
Thank you.